We've been discussing a lot about the issue of Amira La'akum, about instructing a non-Jew to do a malacha for us that we ourselves would not be allowed to perform on Shabbos itself. So now what I'd like to get into is, just a continuation of that discussion, would there be a special exception that would be made when you are asking the non-Jew to do an activity for you for the sake of a mitzvah? So of course, if I'm asking a non-Jew to do something that's just for my benefit, that's one thing. But if I'm asking the non-Jew to do something for me because without them doing that, I would not be able to perform a mitzvah, would that be permissible or perhaps not? That is a very important question that is discussed two different places in the Gemara. So we start with number one. I put this on here, right? Okay, this is Amira L'Nachri Chela Gimel, which is B'makom Mitzvah, U'Litzarech HaRamim. So we start with the Gemara Maseches Erevin, Daf Samaches Amid Aleph. And this is a very strange Gemara because it is not based on the reality that we understand of medicine today. So the Gemara says that when a child used to have a bris milah, the only way to ensure that the child would not get an infection after the incision was done, the only way to make sure is if they would wash the baby off with warm water beforehand and then with warm water after the baby was completed with the procedure. That was the assumption. Now, of course, today we know you have to put antibiotics, you have to put cream, bandages, whatever it may be, but in the days of the Gemara, that is what they believed was going to make the child healthy, and without that, it was assumed that the child was going to potentially be in danger. So now says the Gemara as follows. What happens when you have a situation where you have a child who's about to have a bris milah, you have everything prepared, you heated up the water before Shabbos, the bris milah was supposed to be on Shabbos, the Gemara says you're allowed to do a bris milah on Shabbos, even though you're making blood come out of the body, which is generally not supposed to be done, but for the sake of bris milah, says the Gemara, it is allowed. I'm sorry, says the Pasuk, Parshas Tazria, Vayom HaShmini Yimol B'Sar Lo, so you do a bris milah even on Shabbos. So now the Gemara wonders, Hahu Yenuka De'ishtapech Chamime, so you have a young child who's about to have his bris milah, we have everything ready to go, and as we're carrying the warm water to be there for right after the bris to bathe the baby, somebody bumps into the water carrier and he spills the hot water all over the floor, and now we are not going to be able to do the bris milah. So what do we do? So what are the options? What would you say the options are? No? We happen to be learning a series about something that may potentially be an option. Yeah? What's the option? Ask the non-Jew. Why don't you go down the block, ask the non-Jew to heat up some water. Hey, we want to do a bris milah today. We had everything ready to go. The problem is that right now we are unable to do it because the water just spilled out of the bucket and we don't have enough water to do the bris milah and make sure the child will be healthy. Can you go ahead and heat up the water for us? Not what the Gemara suggests. What does the Gemara say? That's what the Gemara should have said, correct? What does the Gemara say? Let's read the last line. Amar lehu Rava. Rava said, oh, that's a big problem. We had every intention of doing a bris milah, and now we got stuck because we don't have water. What do we do now? Says Rabbi, I have a great idea. Nishai le'ime. Why don't we go to the mother who's postpartum, who just had the baby? Why don't we go ask the mother whether she needs hot water? Sometimes a woman who's postpartum, again, the doctors say today that a woman who's postpartum should not sit in the bath for a few weeks. It's not healthy for her. But maybe she needs to bathe herself, shower herself, use some hot water to make herself feel good. She is a genuine chole. She is somebody who's really not well. She just had a baby a couple of days ago. And therefore, the Gemara says, I have a great idea. Go ask the mother whether she needs hot water heated up for her. Put in twice as much water as you otherwise would have needed for her. And then, once you have the water heating up for the mother, you may as well use the extra water for the baby. Sounds good? Sounds good. Correct? What do you see from here? What can you see from here? What can you extract from this Gemara in terms of our question? The question was, would I be allowed to ask a non-Jew to do activity for me on Shabbos for the sake of the fulfillment of a mitzvah? What do you learn from this Gemara? No. No. Why not? Because the Gemara doesn't give that as an option. The most obvious option should have been, go to a non-Jew down the block, ask him to heat up the water, and do the mitzvah of bris milah. That is not what the Gemara says. And from here, it would seem that you would not be allowed to go ahead and ask a non-Jew to do something for you on Shabbos, even for the sake of a mitzvah. Look at the Rambam in Perek Vav Halacha Yud, that's here in number Beis. The Rambam says, Shakho v'lo hiviu sakin me'erev Shabbos. Let's say you know you have to do a bris milah on Shabbos morning, but you forgot to bring the knife that you're going to use. What do you do? Omer la'akum lahavi sakin b'Shabbos uvilvad shalo yavi oso derech rishus harabin. You're allowed to ask a non-Jew to bring the knife, but you're not allowed to ask the non-Jew to violate the malacha of hotzah. You can ask him to go figure out how to get it to you, but let's say he has to drive to another community in order to pick up the knife and bring it back. Says the Rambam, that would not be allowed. Why wouldn't it be allowed based on this Gemara? What does the Gemara say? When the water spills out and you now are unable to do the bris milah because you don't have the water, you're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to fill it up for you. Correct? That is the position of the Rambam and the overwhelming majority of the Rishonim. That when it comes to a mitzvah on Shabbos, we would not just say carte blanche, you have an allowance to ask a non-Jew to do anything for you. We would say this falls under the regular category of Amir l'Nachri, which would not be permissible. Along comes the Baal HaItur. Baal HaItur is one of the Gedolei HaRishonim. He lived in the 12th century. He was in Provence in France. And the Baal HaItur has a very different girsa in the Gemara, which means he has a different version of this whole Gemara, and he reinterprets it to mean something else. Along comes the Baal HaItur, and he says, of course, if I have the opportunity to do a mitzvah on Shabbos, and the only thing standing in my way is asking a non-Jew to help me out to make sure it becomes a possibility, says the Baal HaItur, I would be allowed to do that. Now, of course, he can't read that into this Gemara. He had a different version of the Gemara, and that is why he came to his conclusion. But this turns out to be a major, major machlokas HaRishonim between the Rambam and most of the Rishonim who agree with him, that for the sake of a mitzvah, you would not be allowed to ask a non-Jew to do it. And the Baal HaItur, on the other hand, who says, no, it's for the sake of a mitzvah, that would be enough of a reason to allow ourselves to do it. Now, the Mishneh Berurah and the Magen Avraham all say that because we have a major dispute between the Baal HaItur and the Rambam, which is two major Rishonim, because of that, if you have E-Efshar B'inyan Acher, if you're totally stuck and there's no other way around it, and you really feel that it's important to do this mitzvah on Shabbos, and the only way to do it is to ask the non-Jew to help you facilitate it, that would be something that is permissible because, after all, you can rely on the opinion of the Baal HaItur. That is what the Mishneh Berurah writes in quoting the Magen Avraham. Okay, so that is the first place where the Gemara talks about violating Shabbos for the sake of a mitzvah. Now, hold on to your question for a minute. Okay. Now we come to a Gemara, Meseches Gittin, on Daf Ches. That's the first paragraph of Meseches Gittin. And the Gemara tells us a very interesting story. Says the Gemara, there was once an Arab owner of land in Eretz Yisrael. And now he puts up a sign that that the property is for sale. The problem is he puts the sign up on Shabbos. So obviously I'm not allowed to buy and sell on Shabbos. I'm not allowed to do certain activities on Shabbos. So what am I going to do? If I wait till tomorrow, what's going to happen? Potentially, one of his Arab neighbors is going to buy it. Now, of course, no Jew is going to buy it on Shabbos. One of the Arab neighbors has no problem going and buying it on Shabbos. But we have a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So if I buy the land, then I'm in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. If an Arab neighbor buys the land, then that's a problem. Says the Gemara, you'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew to go draw up a contract for you and sign it for you on Shabbos, in order that the land should be able to be bought by the Jew, even though it is Shabbos. Whoa, what's going on here? How can you have a non-Jew do malacha for you on Shabbos, writing up a contract, signing it for you? Didn't we just say by the Bris Milah, the Gemara seems to say that you would not be allowed to ask a non-Jew to do malacha, to heat up the water on Shabbos, even for the sake of Bris Milah? So how do you understand this? Good question. It's such a good question. Tosfos and all the Rishonim ask the question. It's a stira. It's a contradiction between the two Gemaras. The Gemara Maseches Erevin says you would not be allowed to ask a non-Jew to help you fulfill a mitzvah on Shabbos. The Gemara Maseches Gittin seems to say that when it comes to the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, we would allow it. Now Tosfos writes, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is in a category in a league of its own. Why is Yishuv Eretz Yisrael in a league of its own? He says, because Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. We have 613 mitzvahs in the Torah, but Eretz Yisrael is one that is of paramount importance. And therefore, he says, that is why that is the exception to the rule. We would allow a non-Jew to go and draw up a contract for you and do malacha for you in order to buy that piece of land on Shabbos because Eretz Yisrael is just that important to us. And we would allow it a dispensation for that particular circumstance. But you cannot extract from that to anywhere else. Look at the Chazon Ish here in number Gimel. Chazon Ish says, even though they allowed you to do the prohibition of Amir l'Nachri in order to buy the piece of property in Eretz Yisrael, lo hitiru b'mila. They did not allow you to do it in order to perform the bris milah. But what do you mean? Bris milah is bris milah. It's also a mitzvah. The answer is, he says, kavanasam de chazal shiklu davar sheyucha ligram zilzal b'shmir ha-shabbos, v'hamidu divreim af b'makam karis. He says, It's very hard to know what the cutoff is. Why did Chazal say that when it comes to the mitzvah of inhabiting Eretz Yisrael, buying a piece of property in Eretz Yisrael, that's considered to be very important mitzvah, and therefore we would allow Amir al-Nachri in order to buy the house? On the other hand, when it comes to Bris Milah, I would have said Bris Milah is also pretty important. And yet, we don't allow it. Says the Chazon Ish, it's very hard to put yourself back in the mind of Chazal and recreate why it is they said this, and why it is that they didn't say that, and how it is that we can extrapolate from one to the other. And therefore, he says, that is something that we have a very hard time making a blanket rule about from any of the exceptions that we find in Chazal. But that is the way he explains it. But again, my point in this being that there are only two places where the Gemara seems to discuss both of these, where the Gemara seems to discuss this issue about mitzvah. And the question is, where do you go from there? So as we mentioned, I'll get to your question in a minute. As we mentioned, the Bala Iter writes the following. Look at number Dalet. Hu Hadin. The Bala Iter expands this and he says that it goes to all mitzvahs. Bala Iter himself, the conclusion that he had was, you're always allowed to do Amira L'Nachri in order to do a mitzvah. Right? And everyone else disagreed. The Rambam and the Bali Atosas, everybody else disagreed and said, no, the Gemara seems to say the conclusion is you're not allowed to. And the exception to the rule was only buying the house in Eretz Yisrael, but in general you wouldn't be allowed to. Says the Bala Iter, I expand this and I say, kol midi de mitzvah avdinan al yidei eina yehudi de mishum de lo yidchu a mitzvah. We don't want to push off the opportunity to perform a mitzvah. V'karvani lomar, and therefore says the Bala Iter, let's say you have somebody who forgot to light Shabbos candles. It ever happened? Happens once in a while. Somebody forgot to light Shabbos candles, and you have to understand, in the days of the Rishonim, when somebody forgot to light Shabbos candles, they didn't have electric lights on. They were in the dark. So what am I going to do? I'm going to have Friday night meal in the dark? That's a makom mitzvah. I need Shabbos candles in order to have oneg Shabbos, in order to be able to sit with my family and have a Shabbos meal. In that case, says the Bala Iter, in my opinion, you'd be allowed to go ask the non-Jew down the block to come into your house and turn on, and not turn on lights, to light the fire, which is a real malacha, because you're doing it for the sake of Oneg Shabbos. That is the opinion of the Bala Iter, which again, is something that is the minority opinion in the Rishonim. Now, this is a little bit of a shocking statement. If you look here in the Ramah, number Ches, look in number Ches, the Ramah writes, Yesh Omrim, there are those who say, now tell me, who's he referring to when he says Yesh Omrim? Yesh Omrim to Mutar Lomar Le'eni Yehudi Lahadik Loner Lusuda Shabbos. Who's that? The Bala Iter. What he's quoting is this outlier opinion, which is, you are allowed, perhaps, potentially, to ask a non-Jew to turn on your lights on Shabbos, if you're going to then be prevented from having Onik Shabbos. I forgot to light candles, whatever reason, was very busy in my house. Says the Ramah, which is the way Ashkenazim usually follow, he says, quoting the Bala Iter, that they would be allowed. Sha'al pizeh nagu rabin lahaka b'davar, letzavos le'eni yehudi lahadik neiros letzorach suda, bifrat besudas chasana umila. If I have, let's say, a Sheva Brachos, and we're all together and we have guests and we didn't light enough candles, then we would allow to do that. However, yesh lahachmir b'makam she'in tzorach gadol. However, the Ramah says we should be stringent if it's not a major tzorech. What's a major tzorech? Meaning, we're going to sit in the dark on Shabbos. We have a lot of guests for the Sheva Brachos and we don't have light for them. So the Ramah says, yes, it's true, I would allow it in very extenuating circumstances. And the reason I would allow it is because the conclusion of the opinion of the Bala Iter, who is not a small opinion in the Rishonim, he's a very significant opinion in the Rishonim, even though most of the Rishonim disagree with this conclusion, but since that is what he says, therefore, we have a right to rely on his opinion when you have a major tzorech gadol, when you have a major need for a mitzvah observance that has to be done. Okay. Now look at the Primigadim. Primigadim tells us an interesting story. Primigadim says as follows. Maisha shahaya b'chag hasukos tav kuf lamed zayin. Anybody knows math? What year was that? I have no idea. So you can say whatever you want. Or you can Google it and find. Tav kuf lamed zayin. No. Come on, you didn't go to the gym yet. Come on. Tavkuv Lamed Zayin, what year was that? So it says, he was in his community on Sukkos. And what happened? He lives in Lvov. He lives in the city of Lvov in Europe. Asisi Sukkah. I made a Sukkah. Samachti Apolim Atzelim. And unfortunately, I relied on workers to build a Sukkah for me who were very careless, who were not careful about how they were doing the job. Ula'achar suda b'leil Shabbos Kodesh, on Friday night of Sukkis, after he finished eating, nafal haschach legamri. The whole schach collapsed. So now, if you have a sukkah without schach, you can't sit in the sukkah. V'hayal yitzar gadol. Says the Prima Gadim, had a tremendous amount of pain. Not because the schach landed on me, but because now I wouldn't be able to do the mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah on the Yom Tov of Sukkot. Now, can I go ahead and reconstruct the sukkah on Shabbos or Yom Tov? No, why not? Bona, correct. That would be considered building. Or, perhaps it would be considered making an ohel on Shabbos. You're not allowed to build on Shabbos. You're also not allowed to make an ohel, which means an overhang, onto something else. So here, if I would put up the schach, that would probably be making an ohel or building, something like that. So he says, I had a lot of pain that I was unable to sit in the sukkah because my workers who put up the sukkah for me were not careful enough to do it the right way and to tie it down properly. My children went to the neighbor, who happens to be very handy, and he came into my house, into the sukkah, and he straightened everything out. He put the beams in the right place, and he laid down the schach on top of it. And I did not react. Meaning my children went ahead and they thought they were going to help me. They had someone come over. They had the person put everything back together the way it was. And I didn't say anything. Now, why didn't I say anything? What's the reason?
It might be okay.
It might be okay. Why might it be okay? So he gets into the discussion and he says, the bottom line is over here that we have the opinion of the Bala Iter. The Bala Iter, as we mentioned, says that when you have a makom mitzvah, when you have a mitzvah that has to be performed or observed, perhaps you'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew to help you be able to do your mitzvah. And therefore he says, in this situation, when I didn't have a sukkah to sit in, and I was in so much pain over the fact that my sukkah was destroyed on Sukkis, and now here it is on Shabbos and I have nothing to do to fix it, says the Prima Gadim, that is considered a tzarech gadol. That is considered a major extenuating circumstance. And therefore, he says, that is why it would seem that that would be permissible. And that is why he said, after my children called the non-Jew from the neighbor, the non-Jewish neighbor to come over and fix my sukkah, that is why I did not protest. That is why I didn't say anything. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, look over here. Rabbeinu pasak kama pa'amin. Rabbeinu, meaning Rav Moshe Feinstein, said many times, Shaladina, the halacha is ba'akroi. Once in a while, that's the important word here. Be'akrai means once in a while. The tzorech mitzvah, the tzorech gadol. If you have a major need or a major mitzvah that is in your way, mutter, you would be allowed to ask a non-Jew like the opinion of the Bala Iter. Rak bekvius, kigon shahayu batek nesio shenagu bekvius shegoy hayamadik neirosam balayla l'neilo chedome hechmiro. He says there are some shuls that every Shabbos the lights go out at Shalashudas, and it's still Shabbos afternoon, and it's dark in the room, and a non-Jew comes around and lights all the lights. Rav Moshe said, no, that's not something that you should set up l'chatchila, that doesn't make sense. You should really make sure that it's set up in advance. And he says that this is something we should not rely upon unless you're in a very extenuating circumstance. You cannot say that every Shabbos is considered an extenuating circumstance. Extenuating means, once in a while, this happens, and that's extenuating. If it happens that you set up the system that every Shabbos this is what you should do, then Rav Moshe says that would not be an appropriate thing to rely upon. Now the truth is, this is a very problematic psak in the first place, because the Rama here is quoting a very, as we said, an outlier opinion. Most of the Rishonim disagree with the Bala Iter's conclusion. As we saw before, the Rambam, the Balei Atosas, all the major Rishonim disagree and say, you would not be allowed to ask a non-Jew to do a malacha for you on Shabbos, even for the sake of a mitzvah. That is what they deduced from the Gemara by the Bris Milah when the water spilled out, correct? So it's very strange that the Rama uncharacteristically quotes the opinion that is generally not the majority opinion. Why would he do that? That sounds like a very strange thing to do. So the Aruch HaShulchan, if you look here, number Yud Aleph, says, Ha'inyan Tamua. It's very strange to me. Lismoch Adas Yachid B'makom Shekola Poskim Chokim Alav. Says it's very strange that if all the major Rishonim disagree, why does the Rama adopt that strange position, which is not the accepted one? Of course, it's a legitimate position, but it's not the norm. So therefore, he says, in his opinion, he thinks, this is a very strange thing, and that is why, unless you have a very, very extenuating circumstance, this is definitely something that we would not encourage people to rely upon. Aside from the discussion about a makom mitzvah, there is also a discussion which is a parallel discussion about sarchei rabim. So let's say what we spoke about before is a bris milah, or my sukkah falls down. What if I have a tzarchei rabim, meaning the community needs something? So would that be something that I would be allowed to have a non-Jew come and do on behalf of the community? So say, for example, we come into shul and the lights are off. Now, technically, we could daven outside. It is possible. There's light outside. We could daven outside. The problem is, it's a tzarchei rabim. What do you mean? It's a big inconvenience to make everyone go outside. Everyone has to schlep a chair out of the building. We have to set up outside. Doesn't really make sense. So, is it a tzarech mitzvah? We can do the mitzvah other ways if we worked hard enough. But it is a tzarchei rabim. It is a great need of the community. There's no lights on in the shul. Would I be allowed to have a non-Jew come and turn the lights on in the shul? That's the question. Along comes Rav Meir Eisenstadt, who is the author of the Sefer Panim Meiros. That was in the early 1700s, and he says it would be allowed for a person lomar legoy lasos nira b'makom mitzvah ki ha'yesh lismach adasa makilim da'afila b'malacha gemura lahaliko lo ner besuda shabbos mutter. He says we would be allowed to ask a non-Jew to do something for us that was a tzorech rabim. Now, what tzorech rabim is he talking about? Along comes the Chayyadam in the 1700s, in the early 1800s as well, and the Chayyadam writes, here's the case. You have a major storm Friday night. You live in a community where they have all the infrastructure that a Jewish community should have from being established for a long time. Now, what are some of the very important staples of a Jewish community? Of course, every community needs to have a shul. Every community needs to have a mikveh. Every community needs to have a school. Whatever. Every community needs to have a gym. Right? Every community needs certain things. Now, he says every community also needs to have an eruv. Right? Many of the major Jewish communities have an eruv. Why do they have an Eruv? Why don't we just say, everyone stay in your house for Shabbos? Because we know that it's very hard for people to stay inside. And we know that it's very hard for people not to go to their friends and be able to carry things back and forth. And therefore, we have an institution of an Eruv, which allows us, facilitates us the possibility of going around, of going outside of our homes and enjoying Shabbos more. So many major Jewish communities have an Eruv. Here, we went into Shabbos and we have an Eruv every week of the year. Last night, it was a major storm. And some of the wires of the Eruv fell down. Now what happens then? Can't use the Eruv. So what are you going to do? The problem is everybody wakes up Shabbos morning, they don't know that the Eruv fell apart. You know, because either the string is right on top of your house, or because you happen to know a lot about how these things work, but most people don't even think about it. They wake up in the morning, they see, they go outside, they see it's not raining, they start walking. Nobody thinks that because last night there was a storm, maybe the wires are going to be down. That's a problem, correct? So what do? Basically, you're going to have many members of the community, which is a tzarchei rabim, that is a communal issue. You're going to have many members of the community who are going to turn out that they will carry on Shabbos, violate Hotzah, because the Eruv fell down last night. Now, some people may know that when there's a storm outside, you shouldn't trust that the Eruv is up. Maybe, if someone thinks about it. Which is not always so likely that everyone makes that conclusion. But let's say you have a big truck that drives by in the city and hits one of the wires of the Eruv. Now, there was no storm last night. There was no storm. Nobody knows that the truck came and hit the wire of the Eruv except the person who's walking by, happens to walk by that street and notices it on Shabbos morning, runs to the rabbi's house, says, what do we do? The Eruv's broken. The Eruv's down. The rabbi says, what do you want me to do? For me to go fix the Eruv on Shabbos is not a possibility. Why? Why not? What? Makabe Patez, Bona, all kinds of problems. You wouldn't be allowed to fix an Eruv on Shabbos, but maybe I'd be allowed to have a non-Jew be hired to go on his truck and go fix the string of the Eruv. Why would I ask him to do that? I'm not doing it for myself. I'm doing it because the community has a problem. If you don't have a functioning Eruv, people are going to carry outside without even realizing they're doing something wrong. So the Chayyadam comes along. If you look here where I don't have it, the Chayyadam writes, actually look at the Mishneh Berurah. I think I have the Mishneh Berurah here. Yeah. Mishneh Berurah Sif, that's a number Yud Gimel on the sheet, says the Mishneh Berurah in Simen Reish Ayin Vav Sif Katan Chaf Hei Mikal Makom Mutter Lomar Le'eni Yehudi L'Sakin Es HaErev Shen Eskalke B'Shabbos Kidei shelo yavo rabim lidei michshol, says Rabbi Yisrael Meir HaKohen, the holy Chafetz Chaim, passed away in 1933, says the Chafetz Chaim, you're allowed to have a non-Jew be instructed on Shabbos itself to go fix the Eruv if it fell down. Why? Because if he's not going to fix it, we're concerned people in the community are going to go around and carry without knowing that the Eruv is down. Ukedaihu bal ha'itir lismoch alav, lahatir shvus da'amir l'nachri afilu b'malacha da'araisa b'makom mitzvah da'rabim. Says the Mishnah Berurah, the reason why we would allow such a thing is because, after all, in the end of the day, the Baal HaItir is of the opinion that this is permissible. And therefore, he says, that would be enough of an opinion to rely upon when you have a major Tzorech Rabim, either a Tzorech Mitzvah, or you have a Tzorech Rabim, both of that would allow us to do this. Now, what is considered to be a Tzorech Mitzvah or a Tzorech Rabim? So let's say Rav Moshe Feinstein talks about if you have, let's say, a mikvah, a woman's mikvah, which, let's say, they forgot to turn on the heat, so now the water's cold, or the filter's not running, so now the water is going to be dirty, because you have many people who are using it on Shabbos. So nobody wants to go into a mikvah that's dirty. You're going to have a woman show up to the mikvah, you're going to say, you know, I would love for you to use it, I just want you to be aware in advance, you know, the chlorine wasn't put in, or the filter system, the filtration is not working, or it's not hot, it's going to be freezing cold. Many of the women are going to say, forget it, I don't want to go. So Rav Moshe says that would certainly be a Tzorech Rabim. That's something that's going to impact a number of people. That's a Tzorech Mitzvah. That a woman should go to the mikvah at the right time is a mitzvah. And therefore he says that would be allowed. Say, for example, Rav Vosner writes in one of his tshuvas that let's say you have somebody who gets stuck in a bathroom. They go into a hotel on Shabbos, and they didn't realize that it's all automatic, and now they're stuck in the bathroom. And you hear them calling out from outside, somebody get me out of here, I can't walk. Every time I walk, everything's sensor, you know, motion sensors activated, so he doesn't know what to do. So he says that would be a tzorech gadol. To tell a person they have to stay in the bathroom the rest of Shabbos is unreasonable. To have a non-Jew come and be able to relieve them from being there would be something that would be allowed. But Moshe writes, let's say I have a refrigerator that gets unplugged on Shabbos, and all, I think this is the example that he gives in our Chaim Chelek Beis, and all of my food is going to get spoiled. So, can I have a non-Jew come and plug the refrigerator back in so that I don't lose everything? That is a Tzorech Gadol. And for a Tzorech Gadol, we would be allowed to rely on the opinion of the Baal HaItir. But at the same time, you have to be careful that you don't take this out of proportion. You can say everything in your life is a Tzorech Gadol, right? There are certain people who say, everything's urgent, right? Somebody texts you, please call me when you have a chance. Do you need me to call you now? Yeah, very important. Then you call them. Yeah, what's the issue? Something that's not urgent. So Moshe says, and all the poskim say, that you have to make sure that you are not going to do anything that is going to be, you're not going to do anything that is going to be, you know, out of line from what is really a Tzorech Gadol, or really a Tzorech Mitzvah. One more thing before we move further, before I take questions, is the Magen Avraham points out, if you're going to tell me that for the sake of a Makom Mitzvah or a Mitzvah Derabim, you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to be helpful. So for example, if the Eruv fell down, or if we don't have lights in the shul on Shabbos and we're going to have to make a minyan somewhere else, that's considered a Tzorech Mitzvah, Tzorech Rabim. So you'd allow it. So he says, then why can I have builders who come on Shabbos? If we're trying to build a new shul, why not give them an extra day to work on the building? Right? Normally, if I'm doing work on my house, I can't have the workers come and do work on Shabbos. But you'll say, that's not a real mitzvah. Right? So you'll live in the house a week later. But if we finish the shul a week earlier, that's a mitzvah. You're going to have the rabbin be able to benefit from that. Says the Magen Avraham, that's not what we're talking about. You don't say any mitzvah, the rabbin, any mitzvah at all, is something that we would allow a non-Jew to do work for you on Shabbos. That's not something, he says, that I'm nene migufo shel davar, says the Magen Avraham. The shul is going to be built. So yes, in 5 years from now, I'm going to benefit the fact that I go into the shul 2 weeks earlier than I otherwise would have because they came to do the work on Shabbos. However, to say that I should be allowed to have them build on Shabbos, that's not something that I'm getting direct benefit from. And therefore, he says he would not advise that is something that we should be busy with. There was a major controversy in the days of the Achronim when they spoke about whether you're allowed to have a non-Jew come in and light the candles by Ne'ilah in order that we should be able to daven Ne'ilah and say all the piyutim. Now, we could daven Ma'ariv without lights because everybody knows that a daven Ma'ariv, we daven Ma'ariv every night. But to daven Ne'ilah without lights is very hard. You only say those tefillos once a year. So this was a big discussion. The Mishnah Berurah talks about it, whether or not this is a proper minhag, improper, the Ksav Sofer, many others talk about whether this is something that we should sanction or it's something that perhaps we should discourage, because after all, maybe it's better that we just don't violate Amir Lenachri. So as the Chazon Ish said, you really have to figure out in each case in isolation whether this would cross the threshold, whether this would actually be something that has a good, legitimate reason why we are doing it. Or would you say that, you know, it's better that we should just leave it alone and not instruct the non-Jew to do the malacha, even though it would seem that this is something that would definitely give us benefit. Yes, question.